Well, it's 4 o'clock here on my clock on the wall, and so if everyone is comfortable, I'm ready to proceed and like to call the May 17th Budget and Finance Commission meeting to order. And it is 4 p.m. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. The meeting is taking place online. We're continuing to comply with the ongoing social distancing requirements and ensure that the community's ability to participate is maintained. So with that announcement, let me start with a roll call. Allison, would you be so kind as to do a roll call for us?
All right, Commissioner Beasley.
Here.
Commissioner Mason.
Here.
Commissioner Newell. Vice Chair Salverson.
Here.
Chair Latchford.
Here. So we do have a quorum, and that's in place. Let me go ahead and we're going to move to the Pledge of Allegiance. And did I hear, is Commissioner Newell here with us today?
He is not present.
All right. So he doesn't want to stay at the Pledge of Allegiance, I gather. So why don't I call upon my vice chair to help me out in these circumstances? And if you wouldn't mind, Vice Chair Solvenson.
Sure. I pledge of allegiance, to the flag of the United States,
of America,
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God, indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate you doing that. We'll get Mr. Commissioner Newell on the way back. Anyway, I'd like to go ahead and proceed here with a welcome and thank everyone for joining us remotely. We continue to meet through either Zoom or by telephone, and I'm looking at the participant list. We now have a total of 12 people, and I noticed the names of all 12 people who most likely are very familiar with Zoom and telephone. But if there's anybody in the audience who may find themselves wanting to participate, let me just quickly state a few simple steps that you need to take if you're in this meeting by Zoom. So on your screen, you'll find down in the bottom of your screen in the middle a participants icon, and you'll open a dialog box that lists all the participants in the meeting. In fact, you can do this without having to scroll in. Once you find that dialog box, scroll down until you find your name and select your name. Once your name is selected, a second box will pop up where you have the option to raise your hand. Once that is done, I will ask that your computer be unmuted, and you will begin to participate once I tell you to begin. Actually, those participating by phone, it's just a little bit easier. All you need to do to raise your hand is hit *9, and then to mute your or unmute your microphone, it's *6. At this time, I'm going to ask if there's anyone in the audience who would like to come forward and participate and call in the audience with the commission. And Allison, do we have anyone who has sent a blue card in?
There's nobody.
Okay. All right. With that said, then we'll move on and I'll close call to the audience with no one wishing to participate. And we'll move through to the next item on the agenda. And that is going to be our staff liaison report. And so I'll ask Mr. Gebhardt for his report, please.
Well, thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners, Mr. Chair. Just a couple items to report for you this afternoon. One is we are, as you may or may not be aware, but we are kind of moving forward with the PSPRS bond issuance process. We haven't really taken too many steps yet that would necessarily obligate the town in terms of financially or otherwise, but the meetings, the schedule, everything is really getting formalized and set up. We do anticipate taking that issue again to council for June 2nd for authorization, and then we will move forward in earnest at that point in time. With that said, we are in the process. One of the things that we want to do is get an updated rating, and so that has been scheduled and placed on the calendar, and that would be something that we would obligate the town for. It's really not too much money. Typically, you know, anywhere from $15,000. It really depends on the size of the issuance, but I think it's going to be around $15,000, maybe a little bit higher than that. But other than that, there's no other financial strings that the town is obligated for in terms of that issuance. We don't want to place the cart before the horse, but you know, the timing is kind of the essence for this issue, and we want to make sure that we do complete it, that if at all possible, by that first or second week of July, as quickly as possible once we enter the new year. Additionally, I wanted to talk about the audit and kind of follow up with our RFP process with auditors. We have completed that process, and we selected new auditors. Actually, we selected a new firm. The firm's name is Henry & Horn. They are based out, they have a couple offices, but primarily based out of Tempe, and I think they also have a Casa Grande office. They actually were in this past week doing some interim work, documenting internal control systems and processes, and then testing those systems and processes as well. So they've already begun the process of trying to understand the town, how we function and operate, and then of course they'll utilize that and do final field work testing. Right now we're scheduled tentatively for, I believe, the third week of September for them to come out and do on-site field work and complete the audit process. So with that, I'll be more than happy to, well, I guess that will conclude. I don't think I can take questions. That will conclude my staff liaison report.
David, just not a question, just could you clarify the name of the firm again that you selected?
Sure, it's Henry & Horn.
Henry & Horn?
Yep.
Okay.
They are a large regional firm. Again, they primarily do all of their work in Arizona, and very, very much invested in the local government and municipal audit sphere here in the state. So, a lot of clients. You know, I mean, I think most of you they do the work for Town of Marana. So. You know, so they are very familiar with this area, even Southern Arizona, very active and involved and invested here in the southern region of the state.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cuthbert. With that, we're going to accept your report and move on to the regular session agenda that we have. And now, Allison, would you kindly read in item number one?
Agenda item one, review and approval of the April 20th, 2021 regular session meeting minutes.
All right, thank you, Allison. Has every commissioner had a chance to review and read the regular session meeting minutes from April 20th? And if so, are there any comments, questions, or corrections? All right, here in the none. May I call for a motion? Will Commissioner please make a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Always have a tie. So this is Commissioner Beasley, you moved to approve. And Commissioner Mason, you moved to second.
Yes.
Or is it? It's not the other way around now. I want to make sure I got this. All right. Okay. Guys are so quick. Anyway, all right. So we have a motion that's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And passes unanimously. All right, let's move on to item number 2 of the regular agenda. Allison, please read in item number 2, please.
Agenda item 2, presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 2020-2021 financial update through March 2021.
Okay, thank you very much, Allison. I'm going to make the presumption that Ms. Gomez is going to present this to us. Am I correct, or if I'm wrong, I think I'll never do that again. So,
yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair, Commission members. Let me go ahead and share my screen, and I'll bring up the presentation here. All right, I'm assuming everybody can see that okay. All right, so this is our update through March. We are now 3/4 of the fiscal year done. And I wanted to mention just some verbiage that we had placed in the executive summary section of the council communication for the item. At this point, I think staff can confidently say that we've successfully navigated the challenges that were posed to us by the COVID pandemic. You know, we were going into basically a complete unknown a year ago. We're pleased to report that financial performance across all funds has exceeded expectations. Revenues are much stronger than anticipated, particularly for the licenses and permits. Our sales tax collections, and there's also indications that we're starting to see some improvement in some of those categories that were fairly impacted, restaurant and bar and bed tax. So just wanted to throw that out there. We continue to see just very positive signs overall. Starting with the general fund first and the revenues, we have our major revenue sources there, local sales tax. Talk about that category first. Things continue to look very positive there. Through March, we're at almost 87% of the budget, or $15.7 million. We are expecting to come in about $20.4 million at the end of the year. So that's a little over $2 million, or 12% above budget. And that's really due to a few major categories. Construction, retail is very strong. Utility collections have looked good throughout the year, as well as online collections, just blowing through the budget amount for some of those categories. So that's the reason for the overage there. State shared revenues, we're at actuals of $10.5 million through March, or just under 80% of budget. Those revenues are also looking well. Our income taxes, no surprise there, are trending to budget. And then we're seeing with our state shared sales taxes, that we're actually trending above budget levels. So some good news there. We are looking to come in over budget in that category by about 3% or $400,000 at the end of the fiscal year. Charges for services, we've talked about this category throughout the fiscal year. It has struggled a bit because of COVID. We've been watching the budget closely. At this point, we are just over 64% of the budget amount of $2.2 million. We are expecting to come in about 12% below budget at the end of the year, or just under $2 million. That's about a $270,000 shortfall. Again, just due to COVID, some of the parks revenues, the transit fare box revenues, those categories got hit pretty hard. Licenses and permits, knocking it out of the park there. As we have been throughout the fiscal year, we are already over budget by about 162%, $2.6 million in actuals through March. Currently through April, through March in terms of single-family residential permits, we're at 385. Through April, I'll go ahead and throw this out, we're at 423 single-family residential permits, and that is the highest we've been since 2005. So it just took a pandemic to get our housing market going. So obviously we had budgeted conservatively in this category. It's trending considerably over budget due to both that residential activity and commercial as well. And then all other category, that's going to look pretty odd at this point, because now through March, we actually have factored in one half of our American Rescue Plan dollars of about $5.5 million. So it's a total of $11 million that we're expecting. We don't know for certain that we're going to receive that yet before June 30, but we have programmed that in for the year-end estimate at this point, and we'll adjust as we receive more information. So really the bulk of that overage, that $13.2 million year-end estimate, $5.5 million is the American Rescue Plan dollars. Some of the other categories that are in there, we've talked about this previously, but our other grants are in there, so the CARES funding, other intergovernmental revenue, such as our RTA reimbursements for transit services, and that sort of thing. Overall, for the general fund revenues, we are expecting to come in about $52.2 million by the end of the year, compared to the budget amount of $43.3 million. So that's about 21% above budget, or $8.9 million. But again, a big chunk of that being the ARP, American Rescue Plan dollars, but then our strong revenues in permits and local sales tax as well. On the expenditure side, things looking positive there as well. Personnel, we are at about $19.1 million through March, or 66% of the budget. We are expecting to come in close to $700,000 below budget in that category. That's about 2.3%. That's primarily due to, I talked about the, in previous presentations, I've talked about our RTA reimbursements from transit service, just the fact that that service, you know, severely was cut back a lot. We saw a lot of reduced activity from COVID. And so on the personnel side, obviously, we're going to see some pretty significant savings there. So a big chunk of that is transit staff, some parks staff that we've seen savings on from some of the COVID impacts. But then we also had a school resource officer programmed in the budget at the Lehman Academy, and that was a wash with revenues. It was dependent on an IGA, which did not come to fruition. And so that is a big chunk of that budget variance there. And then some overall just general savings, just being prudent with refilling positions, analyzing positions as they become vacant, and that sort of thing. On the operations and maintenance side, we are at $7.2 million through March, or about 63% of budget. We are expecting to see some savings of about $400,000 in that category, trending below budget at this time, but we have some spending underway. Some of the main categories that we're expecting some savings in is fuel, for one thing, some vehicle repair and maintenance, some of the contract personnel in parks that we have programmed in there for some of our parks programs that were impacted by COVID. So those are some of the main categories of savings. And then just overall savings that we're seeing by departments who are continuing to be prudent with their spending. Capital, we're looking at ending the fiscal year about on budget there. The main variants there are the budgeted push house improvements over at Steam Pump Ranch that we will be carrying forward into next fiscal year. And then the transfers out, we've mentioned those previously. Those are going to come in on budget. That consists of our debt service transfers and our CIP transfers. So in total, for the general fund expenditures, we are expecting to end the year about $1.2 million or 2.7% below budget. And that's due to the savings that I was mentioning in personnel and O&M. Here's the chart for the general fund. So again, it does look wonky just because of the ARP dollars that are in there, but you can see the revenues at 37.1 currently through March compared to last fiscal year. Now that difference in terms of the actuals through March is primarily the CARES funding. But even when you back that out, we're still up about $1.2 million over last fiscal year. Expenditures just about flat, 28.9 compared to 28.7 last year. So we are currently sitting at a year-to-date surplus of about $8.3 million. We are expecting to end the year with a surplus of about $8.9 million, which again factors in the American Rescue Plan dollars. As a reminder, we had budgeted to use fund balance of about $1.2 million. These estimates would bring our fund balance at the end of the year to just under $30 million, which would equate to 67% of budgeted expenditures, and that exceeds our council's 25% policy by $18.6 million. So going into next fiscal year, planning that $10 million PSPRS payment, et cetera, we'll be coming into the fiscal year in a strong position in order to do that. Moving on to the highway fund, no real changes there on the revenue side. HERF revenues tend to look well. We are expecting those to come in a bit over budget by about $100,000 by the end of the fiscal year. The budget grant revenues that we've mentioned previously are tied to reimbursements for LaToya, and that project is significantly done. So we will not be seeing additional reimbursements there. The expenditure side, we have the fall towns payment preservation expenditures that have hit the books now, as well as some of the spring expenditures starting to trickle in. In total, the highway fund expenditures are about $2.4 million through March. We are expecting to see a budget variance in expenditures of just over $500,000. The bulk of that is due to the Lambert Lane overlay project. We are expecting to carry over about $300,000 for that project. So that is the bulk of that difference there. But then also expecting to see some personnel savings tied to the LaToya project, the construction inspectors that were temporary, and just some overall vacancy savings as well. Here's the chart for the highway fund. The revenues of $2.7 million in actuals compared to $3.2 million last year. That is due to, I'd mentioned this in previous months, the one-time HERF distribution that we got last year of about $200,000. That was a one-time revenue source in fiscal year 1920. That's the bulk of the difference there. Expenditures are at $2.4 million through March compared to $2.2, so just a smidge higher. We are currently sitting at a surplus in the fund of about $350,000. We are expecting to end the year with a surplus of about $250,000. And again, that is due primarily to the rollover for the Lambert Lane project. As a reminder, we had budgeted to use fund balance of about $160,000. So our current estimates would bring our ending fund balance as of June 30 to about $1.1 million in that fund. Last but not least, the Community Center Fund. Things continue to look positive there on the revenue side for contracted revenues. We are sitting at about 83% of budget, or $2.9 million in actuals through March. Just for comparison purposes, that's about $400,000 or 16% higher than the same period last fiscal year. We are expecting those overall revenues to come in about 6.5% above budget, or $230,000. That's due to strong golf revenues as well as member dues. We had talked about the town operating revenues previously. Those struggled this fiscal year with the facility closure and COVID in general. We have not changed those estimates in some time. We're still sitting at about a $500,000 shortfall estimated for that revenue source. And on the half-cent sales tax revenues, those are trending well. Retail and remote collections are helping that category a lot, and we are expecting to end the year about $280,000 or 11% over budget for that category. Moving on to the expenditures, the contracted expenditures are at about 73% of budget or $3.3 million through March. For comparison, again, to last fiscal year, that's about 10% less or $360,000 than what we saw through the same period last year. We are expecting to come in just under budget for the contracted expenditures by about 1.5% or $70,000 for that category. And then on the town operating side, we are expecting to hopefully be able to cover a good chunk of that revenue shortfall with some operating and maintenance savings that we will likely see, as well as some personnel savings, significant personnel savings in the fund too, from when the facility was closed. The chart for the Community Center Fund through March. You can see the revenues of $5.5 million compared to $5.1 million last year. So really those strong golf revenues and local sales tax revenues helping to offset the town operating shortfall that we're seeing. Expenditures are at about $4 million through March compared to $4.6 million last fiscal year. We are currently sitting at a surplus in the fund of about $1.5 million and are expecting to end the year just a little less than that, about $1.3 million surplus. We, as a reminder, budgeted a surplus of about $220,000 in this fund. Currently, our year-end estimates would bring us to a fund balance of about $2.1 million. And at this point, the bulk of that is due to the timing of the Gulf irrigation project. Aside from some consulting and initial design services, really going to see a pretty significant budget variance there as construction obviously wouldn't be commencing this fiscal year. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right, well, thank you, Wendy. And that's your very thorough presentation as normal. And I do want to comment that your opening comments about our observations about how well the financial end of the town is performing is certainly borne out by the financial statements. I mean, I went through them and everything is just performing very strongly for the most part. I mean, it's hard to pick apart anything you really need to criticize at this point. So this is normally the time that you sit back behind your desk and say, well, please don't let anything bad happen. But, you know, you've got a lot of things moving in the right direction, at least from my perspective. At this time, why don't I open the floor to my fellow colleagues on the commission and see if there's any questions they would ask of Wendy and her information. Okay. Yes. Vice Chair Salveson.
I just had one question / suggestion. On the revenue chart that where you've got the different sources of revenue, mm-hmm. What I'm wondering is the American Rescue Plan funding is so large, I'm wondering if it might make sense to just call that out in a separate line. I don't know if you can do that. But it does distort things a little bit. I just would be concerned about for future kind of basing anything on that. You know, you want to make sure that we know it's only for 2 years.
That's a good point, Vice Chair Silverson. Thank you for the suggestion. We'll go ahead and implement that. Getting with the points financially. Thank you.
Let me just interject a question on my part regarding that item, the American Rescue Plan. We're just about 6 weeks from the end of the fiscal year. If we don't receive the amount of the grant, is that merely just a reduction in cash and the fund balance? Is that really all it is at this time?
That's correct, Chair Latchford. We don't have any plans or intentions to spend that installment until after June 30. So it would really just be a timing difference with the fund balance. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see. Other questions from members? I hear no questions coming forward. It's always the problem when you have such great results. You know, people don't have any questions. just one question. I was brought up at the last meeting. I'm looking at the golf results, and is the water utility getting charged in there? Is that just a periodic charge that doesn't occur each month?
I'm sorry, Chair Letchford. I'm not sure I'm following. Do you mean the water utility bills that they would be paying?
Right, for the golf courses.
Yes, they are paying those on a monthly basis. Those are included in their expenditures.
So what line item is that on in the statements?
So the way their accounts are structured, the utilities are actually, there's a portion in the maintenance line as well as a portion in the, let me pull up that cash flow real quick, actually. They have it apportioned. I think some of it is in G&A, general administrative, and then the rest would be in the maintenance line.
Okay. All right. So that's what it's going. All right. I'm going to write that down so I don't ask that question again. All right. I got you. All right. So any other questions from members? All right. Well, very good at this point. I thank you for your presentation, Wendy. It's very thorough as usual. And this is probably going to end as one of the all-time best with only one question. I guess I could have made it perfect. But anyway, you got one question. That's it. So,
you're quite welcome.
Thank you very much for keeping us straight on that. At this point, I'm going to move on to item number 3 on the agenda. And Allison, would you mind reading that into the minutes for us?
Agenda item 3, discussion of town manager's fiscal year 2021-2022 recommended budget.
Okay, thank you, Allison. And let me say first that I really appreciate all the hard work that staff has put into this. It never ceases to amaze me, and this is my third time through it, where I've seen so much time and energy and work go into making a budget. I really have to say I'm impressed by everybody's diligence and hard work on this. I appreciate all the responses to the questions. Wasn't sure how many we'd get writing, but I think we had 55 from the Budget and Finance Commission, and staff took the time to answer every single one of them, so I really appreciate that. The amount of information that was provided this year was really extremely thorough, and I don't know if I can think of anything else that we would have needed to be able to go through and look at this recommended budget. So we're going to move on to the tentative budget here once we have a number of actions. And I had, at the time that we had the town council meetings back on the 5th and 6th of the month, I had sent Mr. Gephardt a request to give us a rundown of what's still outstanding to get into the budget and what its impact might be. And if he'd be so gracious, it doesn't have to be exact, kind of give us an idea as to what we might see still come into the budget once it reaches the tentative stage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. So yeah, there are several large, I'll qualify as larger items, the largest of which is the action that the council took on the half-cent sales tax, and with the intent that we could dedicate that revenue stream as a debt issuance repayment source. And so that debt issuance loaded into the budget, we're thinking that debt issuance for parks and other related type projects is going to be between $20 and $25 million. We have received kind of some instruction from the mayor and vice mayor that it's their intent that they would like to see the maximum amount of debt possibly issued to try to accomplish as many parks master plan projects as possible. So we're going to do our best to see what that looks like. Certainly the term and the structure of the issuance will be a factor there, but that's really the big item. Of course, the other one is the Westward Look annexation. That one's going to have hundreds of thousands of dollars of impact. I believe the estimate that we had was around $750,000 impact to the budget. So that one is also coming down the pipe. So look forward to that. Vistoso Golf is another issue that's kind of looming out there. And we anticipate that that the town will apply for a grant of about $1 million. That's what we'll load in just from a capacity standpoint. And we'll put that in the grant program fund. And so we'll load in, assuming that that grant will be successful, just in case it is, put that $1 million in there, and then we'll only spend it if that grant is successful. So, you know, if the grant's not successful, it's no harm, no foul. We won't actually spend any money related to that. I'll say some of the more minor changes to be looking for as well. Our golf contractor has redone their estimates to assume that the 36 holes will be open throughout the summer months and not be closed partially closed due to the irrigation project commencing. And so that will have a little bit of an impact in our community center fund and our golf revenues. Also, the expenditures will be impacted as well, probably to a slight degree. We've got some, again, minor changes in our courts budget that's coming. So I wanted to alert you of that. Nothing all that significant, but with the hiring of our new magistrate judge, he's got some changes that he's proposing, and those will have a minor impact to the court's budget. He's got some ideas of how he wants things structured and staffed. So those changes are just something to be aware of. And then finally, and this, I think, you know, again, probably not significant here, but just worth noting, as we move towards the end of the fiscal year, there's always firming up of the carryover items related to CIP. And so there's a number of projects that as we kind of move closer to the end of the fiscal year, we will kind of firm up those carryover amounts, trying to plan for what, you know, where we'll be for projects, especially that span fiscal years, of course, that aren't complete as of the end of this fiscal year. We need to kind of build in that capacity for next fiscal year in the budget and try to have as strong of a sense as possible. And that's always a tough task, because we don't know, you know, where these projects will exactly land in terms of being complete, but we do our best, and we want to make sure that we have adequate capacity for next fiscal year in case we are not quite as far along in the process as we anticipate. And of course, you know, the big project that is kind of the poster child for that is our irrigation project. We anticipated that we would be kind of commencing that project, that we'd, you know, in our budget for this year, we had $1.1 million dedicated for both design engineering and also starting the work. And as it turns out, as it's looking, you know, we're probably just going to get the design and engineering done. I think that process is more or less complete. We will probably, I'm not saying never, but probably not looking very likely at this point, commencing any portion of the actual irrigation repairs the irrigation repairs or the new system. We're probably not going to undertake that project. That's certainly how it's looking at this point, just due to cost concerns. So we're looking at alternative options there. You know, we'll certainly keep you and the council in the loop in terms of what that looks like, but we're exploring all options with that project. But that's just one of them. There's several other CIP projects as well that, again, we're just going to try to firm up some of our year-end estimates as we kind of move along and move forward. But with that said, we're getting close here. We need to present a tentative on June 2nd to the council, and so those are kind of the main items I'd like to highlight. I'll call on our senior budget analyst, Michael Dykeman, to see if he has any others that he is aware of or would like to touch on that I've missed.
No, thank you, commissioners. Dave pretty much touched on everything. I have seems like a quite lengthy running list of all changes to make between recommended and tentative. And so that covers pretty much all the notable dollar changes right there.
Let me just Back to the financing for the parks and recs, the bonding of $25 million. I think I read somewhere it would take about 90 days to execute that. Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, it's about, you know, it's anywhere from a 2 to 3 month process to actually get out in the marketplace and issue bonds. You know, we can do our best to expedite things, which we're certainly trying to do with our PSPRS issuance. But with the parks bonds, you know, that with that bond issuance specifically, timing is not really of the essence. We can do reimbursement resolutions to reimburse our costs that we would, you know, we can move forward with certain projects and in design work, et cetera, and then reimburse the costs associated with that once the bonds are issued. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, that's something that we're probably going to slow roll a little bit. Not necessarily any strong reason or desire to get out and issue. You know, this would be a tax exempt issuance as opposed to the PSPRS bond issuance, which would be taxable. So not necessarily any strong desire to get out as quickly as possible, but also not necessarily needing to delay things unreasonably either. We'll take it to council, go through all the proper steps and channels and procedures, et cetera. You know, council doesn't meet in August, so that will probably naturally delay things a little bit. So just all different considerations to be thinking about there.
Commissioner Beasley?
David, how much money are you expecting to be able to use for debt service?
So, Commissioner Beasley, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, that's a difficult, little bit of a difficult question. So, what we're planning on, so basically, I'm assuming you're talking about that parks issuance specifically.
Yeah, yes.
That's what we've been discussing. So that issuance, we're looking at least $1.5 million on an annual basis. But there's also a transfer, and I need to highlight this. There's a transfer between, which is basically a repayment between the community center fund and the general fund, where the general fund had loaned, and I use that term very loosely because there's no documentation on it, but the community center fund was loaned by the general fund some initial seed money when it was established. And so as a repayment of that, the community center fund makes $120,000 annual payment back into the general fund to repay that loan. And that repayment also could, you know, there's been talk that could be utilized for debt service as well. So, you know, as much as $1.62 million, could be even a little bit higher than that. But that's kind of where we're shooting for, the ballpark that we're shooting for in terms of an annual debt service payment on those bond proceeds.
I'm guessing about $1.6 million will service a $25 million debt over a 20-year time frame, and something less than 3% interest rate.
Yeah, that's correct, Commissioner Beasley. Yes, these numbers are numbers that I've run across our financial advisor. From Stiefel, and so we feel pretty strong that we're, you know, and we never know where rates are going to be when we issue. That certainly impacts things to a great degree, but at this point we feel pretty strong that the $20 to $25 million number is reasonable, with a debt service of anywhere from a 1.5 to $1.62 million, in that, you know, $1.65 million, somewhere in that ballpark, that range. And of course, the revenue stream from that, you know, that we would be used for utilizing, dedicating for repayment, would be that half-cent sales tax. And that, you know, currently we're at about 2.75, is where we anticipate to end up in terms of collections this fiscal year. And we anticipate that that's going to grow probably another, you know, all else being equal, probably another couple hundred thousand next fiscal year, just with you know, with some of the other things that have transpired recently, without going into too much detail. So,
okay, Commissioner Mason,
just as far as the mechanics of paying the debt service, is the tax revenue, will it continue to go into the community fund, and then it will do a transfer from there into the debt service to pay the debt service?
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, members of the Mr. Chair, members of the commission, that's a really good question. That's something that we've been debating internally, because there are a couple different options there, as you allude to. We could certainly throw that half-cent sales tax completely in the general fund, and in which case the general fund would have to make a subsidy transfer back into the community center fund. That's an option to, you know, keep the community center fund whole and make sure that our golf and our tennis and our community center operations and our swim facilities, that those can continue functioning as necessary, and that fund stays solvent. And then the other option, of course, is just to keep it in the community center fund and make a debt service transfer out of the community center fund into the debt service fund for those debt repayments. So those are really the two options. And I've run my models and forecasts for the community center fund both ways. And, you know, I think as we've come to it, initially we're leaning more towards just, redesignating those monies, repurposing them, throwing them back in the general fund. And then that keeps, you know, kind of the general fund makes those sales tax resources look healthier and stronger. But as we've, you know, kind of done a, you know, kind of thought about it again, we thought, well, I don't know. There's so much community focus and interest in the community center fund. I think it's probably best just to keep those resources in that fund. It kind of keeps things a little more, makes things look a little more stable for the fund. And so we definitely see the benefit of doing it that way as well. And I think that's probably the way that we're leaning at this point, is just keeping that, you know, just from a consistency standpoint, et cetera, keeping those resources in the community center fund. It's also very simple, because then we can just transfer that debt service payment out of the community center fund as well. So
does that mean that the loan per se between the general fund and the community center, are you going to forgive that, and that money would just become part of the debt service?
Yeah, Commissioner Mason, members of the commission. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and that's why we kind of ran it both ways. I mean, if we place the half-cent sales tax revenues in the general fund, then we have to make a subsidy back in the community center fund, again, to keep that fund whole and keep it functioning properly. And so, you know, that $120,000, you're making a transfer from the general fund back in the community center fund as a subsidy, and that $120,000 then becomes almost irrelevant, becomes meaningless, because now you're transferring money in, transferring money out. It just doesn't make sense. So that was kind of why we were thinking that way initially. But again, now we've kind of switched courses there. In terms of that $120,000, yeah, there's not really a good reason or purpose to continue making that payment. I've had, you know, these conversations with our auditors, et cetera, and there's no documentation to this. It was very, very, you know, because really these are all, you know, from the standpoint of the town, these are all town resources. And even though we do have a separate fund set up just for transparency, for accountability, in those reasons, you know, there's really, they're all under the same umbrella of the town. And so, you know, if one fund, you know, for me, I always think of it in terms of the general fund is the primary operating, you know, fund of the town. And so that always has to come first in priority in terms of health. But as long as that general fund is healthy, then I start looking at the other funds of the town, because I want the other funds of the town to remain healthy as well. That's kind of, you know, I think that that's where we're going with this. I think we're going to, the general fund is going to be healthy with the inflows of resources from the American Rescue Plan Act. We don't anticipate any challenges there in the general fund for at least the next couple of years, but even well beyond that. And so then the issue is, well, we need to make sure that the community center fund remains healthy as well. And the best way to really demonstrate that, again, due to all of the public oversight over that fund and interest in that fund, is just to keep that half-cent sales tax remaining in that fund. So
thanks, David.
David, are you going to have to dedicate the sales tax to refund this debt, and should you, in terms of obtaining better interest rates or potential terms on the debt?
Commissioner Beasley, I'm not sure I totally understand the question. Which debt are you talking about refunding?
Again, the debt for Parks and Rec.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So the Parks and Rec, so there's different ways, different structures, again, with when you issue debt that you know, different features. And one of those features that you can load in costs you a little bit more as a call feature. And so that, if you don't have a call feature, typically your interest, your all-in cost of issuance for the debt is a little bit cheaper. You pay a little bit more for a call feature, but the benefit of a call feature is that in the future at some point, if interest rates are lower, then you can call that debt and restructure it, refinance it, refund it. So I think at this point, based upon some very preliminary discussions with our financial advisor, we are looking at a call feature for that debt, but we'll see again where markets are at and what we think is most advantageous at that point in time. Certainly we're coming through a period of time where interest rates have been really at historic lows. And so, you know, from that standpoint, if you're issuing debt at a historic low, you know, if you issue, and also you have to look at the term again, if you're issuing debt at a historic low, you have to think about it. I mean, it becomes kind of part of the conversation. It becomes kind of a bigger issue. But you know, those debt repayments that are further down the road in terms of term, you know, the debt repayments due in year 8, and year 9, and year 10, year 15, et cetera. Those, you're going to be paying a little bit more in interest just naturally, just because of the risk associated with the time frame. And so that's, you know, we have to look at all of these factors when we issue and think about that. But and that typically that's where you see those call features really becoming worthwhile and useful, is because you've issued debt and maybe it's 4 or 5% or 6%, and you can refund that at 3% money and drive down the cost even moving forward on that issuance. So those are things we'll look at down the road, but decisions that we certainly don't have to make right now.
Back to the Parks and Rec for just a second. In reading the master plan, of course, there's a lot more than $25 million that's laid out in the master plan. It extends in more than just the next year. I don't recall how long it would take to gear up and initiate the capital projects to use this money. Has that been, like, maybe I just missed that portion. I think that was an appendix, but have you any feel for when the capital projects would begin under Parks and Rec?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to pass the baton over to the town manager for that question, because she's got her hand raised. And...
Okay. Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Good to see you this evening. So this is a process, as you can imagine, right? We still have to follow procurement procedures. We have to get designers on board. We have to develop plans. We've got to get permits. Then we have to go out to bid for construction. This is not you're not going to see dirt move in the fall. That's not the way that it's going to work. So we'll get on things as quickly as we can. We've got to get project managers on board. You know, $25 million worth of projects is a pretty substantial amount. It's something we can't do with the existing staff that we have. So we'll get temporary people on board during that time period who will help us oversee engineering firms, you know, planning firms, that sort of thing, and then oversee the project itself. So, you know, if I had to guess, I would say that we probably won't see, you know, any dirt being moved on any of these projects until late spring, possibly into the summertime, because we've got all of these other things in a row that we have to do. And of course, we're going to want to maximize the way that we spend our dollars. So first, we have to say, well, what can be done? What are the estimates? Get the council blessing on what's going to happen. And then we're going to want to do things like do all the grading at once, do all the electrical installation at once, do all the water installation at once, because it's just going to make sense from a construction process to do that in a methodical way. And we might also break up contracts. As you know, right now, there's a lot of work going on. And so we're going to want to be strategic about how we go out to bid. Do we do it with a major general contractor? Do we bid these out in different, we just don't know yet. So our engineering and design company will help us put that together. You know, we've got staff right now looking at what's that timetable of the process so that we can, you know, really hit the ground running here very, very soon.
So therein lies a bit of a dilemma in that, listening to your report, David, you know, obviously you're challenged with trying to get to the marketplace before the marketplace begins to raise its rates. And then we have on the other side of the coin, the use of those funds, which has to be strategically deployed, which it wouldn't be if we had to hurry up and rush. So in terms of the budget for the coming year, I just want to bring it back around this whole cycle. We certainly want to be able to get the financing into the budget for the year. At this point, the vast majority of that is going to be sitting there in funds rather than being deployed, from what I'm hearing. And so at this rate, there shouldn't be any risk if we've tied in. It's just a matter that's going to be showing up on the balance sheet. That's about all we have to show for that, which is a good start. But we won't have any major impact to the use of the funds until further out years, if I'm kind of gathering it. Is that a good assumption on my part? Or?
Mr. Chairman, that is absolutely correct. When we issue the bonds, doesn't have to have anything to do with when we actually get started with the work. So we will be able to get started with the work right after the first of the fiscal year, because whenever we issue those bonds, we will have a reimbursement resolution so that anything that we go back to do will be able to pay for with those bonds. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that we'll get all of those bond proceeds, and David can jump in with the details, but those bond proceeds then have a shelf life for when we can use them, which is about 3 years. So we have plenty of time to do any final touches, if there's any, you know, let's say as an example, although this probably won't be the case, but let's just pretend for a moment that things come in lighter than our budget, right? In today's construction costs, I'm not sure that will be the case. But, you know, if they did, and all of a sudden we saw that we had maybe an extra $500,000, we could potentially have room to do one more project, you know, that maybe wasn't budgeted or that we hadn't originally planned for. So, yeah, I mean, this is all, and David, you can jump in with anything else that you want to add. But again, it's almost a parallel but tied together process. You know, we're gonna start with the projects and all of those things, and then Dave we'll work with our financial advisors to then get all of the bonding in place for what it is that we're going to be doing. But there needs to be a little bit of detail, of course, associated with, I mean, you don't go out to the bond market and say, hey, we just want to randomly, you know, we're going to have a little detail about generally what that looks like. And so that's what we're going to be working on as well. David?
Yeah, I know that I don't have much to add. I mean, the town manager's correct. You typically with a tax exempt, well, not typically, always, with a tax exempt issuance, you have to spend 85% of your bond proceeds within 3 years. So so that's kind of the IRS requirement. And, you know, that's kind of, once you issue, that kind of sets that clock in motion. And because the IRS doesn't want you, you know, not basically having that money and them not being able, because it's tax exempt, them not collecting the income taxes on that. So so anyways, it's one of those, they don't want you to, you know, it kind of goes into that arbitrage type realm that you see in local governments, that the IRS wants, you know, wants the U.S. government to collect the full amount that they possibly can. They want, you know, they don't want you taking advantage of tax exempt or municipal environments, municipal rates, where they are feel like they're being taken advantage of from a tax standpoint. So
I know it well. I had a $40 million project and issued tax exempt bonds, and dealing with construction deadlines, arbitrage deadlines, interest rate deadlines. And this is all taking me back to familiar territory. I thought I had left it behind. Okay. Are there other questions regarding the bonding there? What I wanted to do is we did submit our questions for the staff to respond. They did respond. And it's worked very well for me. There's a lot of things I learned from the responses, because sometimes you just can't tell by looking at the number. But do any of you on the commission have any follow-up to the questions that you submitted? Just those, no new questions at the moment. Let's deal with what we submitted, and then we'll move to additional questions. Yes, Commissioner Mason.
Well, I was looking at the questions that the Barron Council submitted that you answered, David, and the one I was looking at that was about PSPRS and whether they're going to have to go through this road again once we've issued the bonds. And is it clear to the council that even though we're putting all this money in reserves and bond proceeds, that, you know, there will be points along this time between now and 2036 that we may have to throw more money into it because of assumption changes and things like that. So is the council aware that that still could be something that we have to do periodically?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Mason, I believe so. I think we've done a pretty good job up to this point of discussing the risks, the potential risks that exist with a structure of this sort. With that said, I think there's always, when we come back on June 2nd, I think there's always the ability for reinforcement of that. We don't know what the markets are going to do over the next 15 or 16 years. We simply right. don't. And anyone who pretends they do, well, good luck with that. I think we landed in a very balanced, very conservative position as to what we have recommended and what the council has approved up to this point. But there's always uncertainty of the unknown out there, and so we'll see what happens.
All right, thanks, Dave.
Yep.
Yes, Commissioner Beasley.
I have a question related to the golf program. You indicated that there is going to be a bit of a redo on the budget because of the delay in the irrigation system. And one of the questions that was asked had to do with Push Ridge. And the information that's come back to us on Push Ridge seems to show somewhere in the neighborhood of upwards of $250,000 worth of losses, which translates to a subsidy of about $33.40 per round of golf that is being projected by the manager. I find that quite disturbing, and I'm really wondering if Push Ridge should be just cut right out of that golfing budget for a whole variety of reasons, including the use of potable water, et cetera, et cetera. What's going to happen with Push Ridge?
Yeah.
I'll jump in if I may. This is the direction the town council has given us to include Push Ridge. They've made a commitment now for 3 years. I don't believe the subsidy is $250, Mr. Beasley. I believe that is the expenses, and that is not without the offsetting revenues. But I could be wrong. That could be just with some capital projects for the first year. Our initial projections were somewhere in the neighborhood. I can't remember, David. We put a pro forma together, 130-ish with all of the revenues. Is that about right?
This shows 223,059.
I think that's for the first year to include some capital projects, but I don't believe that it will be that level for the subsequent 2 years. That decision has already been made by the council, and they've considered all of the issues that you just mentioned, Mr. Beasley. They've considered the potable water, they've considered the subsidy, and they've given us the policy direction, and that's what's included in this budget.
So are we saying that there's no chance that it'll go back to Hilton?
The commitment that the council made was that they would operate it for 3 years, and that in that final year, there would be a full evaluation to make a determination as to what the future would be after that.
Thank you.
And all of the additional investments that would be required in order to continue to keep it, because then we have to do irrigation replacement and other facility upgrades and that sort of thing. In the meantime, the council also directed that we would go out for a request for proposal to see if there is someone interested in wanting to lease the property. We'll be doing that in the fall, and then we'll see if there's any private sector interest.
Thank you.
And I'll just jump in there, Commissioner Beasley, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. That 223 number is correct. That is the forecasted loss provided by our contractor. But that's for next fiscal year. The following fiscal year, it drops down to about $115,000 is what our estimate is, again, from the contractor. So it's not that's not a constant number, although it is a loss. The losses are constant, but the amounts fluctuate from year to year given the activity, the forecasted activity with operating that Push 9 course. So.
Okay. Other questions from members?
Clarification on the Vistoso golf situation. What grant are we trying to get to offset potential expenses?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Beasley, again, the placeholder that we're going to put in the budget is if we are able to consummate the deal working with the Conservation Commission. There is a state grant that it really is via federal money called the Land and Water Conservation Fund. And depending on the appraised value, depending on, we could be eligible for up to $1 million. So we're just putting the placeholder in. Don't know if it would be next fiscal year, would it be the following, but I would rather have the space in there just in case. You know, at this point, we still don't have, you know, things are progressing, but they're just taking some time. So I don't know, you know, when would this transfer, when would we apply, what, you know, I don't know the answers to those questions, but it gives us the flexibility.
So basically, if we don't get it, we don't spend.
Exactly.
If we end up the town purchasing this, is there any long-term idea on what the town wants to do with it?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Mason, at this juncture, the only thing that, the only specific direction would be regarding the, it would be dependent upon if it comes, if it's donated by the conservation fund, there will be conservation restrictions on it. So there's a lot of unknowns at this point, but I think the intention is largely open space, passive recreation.
Okay, thank you.
But in terms of the budget for this coming year, we do have that listed in there as a placeholder, and that would come more than cover the cost that we're incurring with this project. Is that an accurate description of what's in the budget for this project?
The structure of the way that this is being approached is that the property would ultimately be purchased by the conservation fund. Mm-hmm. And so, and then the town would be the ultimate recipient. And that's the conservation fund's model. Mm-hmm. They do the purchasing, they do the fundraising, they then find, could be a government, could be a land trust, could be, you know, any number of different, in order to be the ultimate owners. They are not property owners, they are property acquisition facilitators. And right. So that's basically what that would look like.
Okay, and that is their model, I'm familiar with it. So in terms of the budget, whatever impact we would have on making that model occur, those costs are in the budget. And I don't know whether how much they might be.
There are, again, since we didn't know when that would happen, I don't think any time before the end of the calendar year at the earliest. We're not sure when that transfer would take place, so I didn't really put any money in the budget for maintenance at this point. But we certainly do, if it happens sooner, we have a contingency fund that we could make adjustments from.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was thinking more of pre-acquisition costs, you know, legal consultants.
Again, we do have some money in the budget for that. Yes, we do.
Okay. Yeah, things can take millenniums to complete. So let's see, Vice Chair Salverson, I think you wanted to ask some questions.
Yeah, I was wondering if we could get any clarification on the Westward Look purchase and the impact of the budget. It says the $755K of immediate impact, is that monthly? Are there obviously there's expenses and revenues, just a little more. And then my follow-up question to that is, that's supposedly going to be in the general fund. Is that going to be accounted for as a separate entity, for example, like the community center, or is that going to be lumped into the general fund?
Those will all be general fund revenues because they're all the same categories that we collect. So for example, that $7 to $750, and we're finalizing those numbers now. We want to do our own projections for next fiscal year.
Sure.
But that includes a combination of bed tax, which is part of our general fund revenues, retail taxes, bar and restaurant tax, you know, transaction privilege taxes, and utility taxes. And all of those just go into the general fund. And then any expenses would be part of the general fund as well. And we do have some commitments that will be budgeted next fiscal year for the Westward Look as part of the pre-annexation and development agreement. So those will be budgeted as well as some additional expenses.
Do we need to increase, for example, police support?
We don't at this point. Our police department did an in-depth review of their calls for service. And since the area that they patrol is already at the Ina and Oracle intersection, so they already go down by Tohono Chul, the chief and the department did not feel that there would be any need for an extension of services, certainly for one additional property, which is a resort, a high-end resort. They didn't feel that there would be any notable impact that they couldn't absorb within the deployment, structure that they have in place right now. And of course, if that changes in the future, then we'll have to address that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Commissioner Hayson?
When do you see the impact on our state share revenues for the annexation?
Technically, the annexation is effective the end of this week. So 30 days after the approval. So while we may not actually start receiving it, it takes a while till they get all the paperwork done, but we should get about a month's worth of the revenue for the current fiscal year, and then, of course, the full year next year.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Commissioner.
Just a quick follow-up question on Westward Look. It looks like a company organization called Applied Economics did a forecast for you that sort of generated that positive $750,000. Who are they? What's involved with that?
Certainly, that's a good question. They are a private firm out of Phoenix that do a lot of these fiscal impact analyses across the state for municipalities. They are retained by Sun Corridor to do fiscal impact analyses on economic development projects, that sort of thing. So they have they're very formulaic based on information, very data driven. And we use them for the Westward Look. We've tapped into them for other studies as well. Like I said, they do a lot of work for a lot of other municipalities. They're not very expensive. I want to say under 10 grand.
It's interesting if I can just add a question on to Jim's question there. I noticed in the innovation and technology department, they are pursuing top priority annexation resources. And I guess my basic question is, what costs are included in that and about how much is in the recommended budget to support that?
We have, and I don't have the number at the top of my head, but it's a nominal amount in our professional services for if we needed to do a survey, for a legal description or a fiscal impact analysis or that kind of thing. So we do have some money in the budget for that. Our next area is still part of the priority one annexation area that the town council has already previously established, which includes the Ina and Oracle intersection will continue. It's not going to happen overnight, but we'll begin to put a strategy together for that, as well as the state land, the 885 acres of state land. Those are our priority areas for priority one.
Okay.
So, I mean, considering that Westward Look took, that was something that I brought to the town council 3 years ago. So these things do not happen overnight. And so I think our chances of needing a lot of those resources for next fiscal year are small, but you know, you got to start somewhere.
Okay, no, I picked up the word nominal. I ran with it. Let me ask you this question regarding what might need to still go into the recommended budget. I know on the agenda for the council is water rates, and I know they haven't made a decision yet. Would that would obviously have to be, I guess, if they did execute an act on water rates, that would have to go into the tentative budget or final budget, whenever the timing is. I don't have that down. Do we have a sense of what that might mean in terms of dollars?
Certainly, we do. And the water rate study has been posted and is on the town's website. It has to be posted for 60 days, so it's out there. Okay. And the tentative budget is built upon those recommended water rates, which, as you know, go through a very, very detailed process with the Water Commission. So it is reviewed by an outside commission, you know, citizen commission. And it's actually a lower increase for individual homes, and I don't have the number in front of me, for an individual, say your average resident, than it has been for the past couple of years. And so we've gone up kind of steadily, but it's kind of leveling off in terms of how much that increase is going to be. And over the past several years, it's been on the base rate only. This year, there's a smaller increase on the base rate because we're kind of getting into that good competitive place. And it's also being incorporated into the tiered rate, the conservation rate. So some of the higher tiers, you know, tier one is the lowest level of usage where most of our residents pay. And again, most of our customers are residential out of our total number of water meters. The higher, you know, in some of the higher tiered rates, that amount per gallon is going up.
So the recommended budget already had those rates in there?
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That answers that question. It's in there. I want to just note that Commissioner Noel has joined us. Allison hasn't seen that yet. Do I have other questions from commissioners? Yes.
Are we open to questions other than what are likely changes to the budget?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. One of the questions was, what is the positive benefit associated with funding Visit Tucson and the Oro Valley Chamber of Commerce? One of the responses that was given to the town council is that the Visit Tucson organization said there's a $40 per dollar improvement to the town via their calculation. That sounds a bit biased. I can't say it's an error because I don't know, but I guess the question is, what really is the justification for funding Visit Tucson and the Chamber of Commerce?
Certainly, I'll be happy to jump in on that one. The reason why the town of Oro Valley is a partner with Visit Tucson, well, a couple reasons. First of all, by state law, we are required to spend a certain amount of our bed tax specifically on visitor attraction. That is a state law requirement. So really, we can do that one of two ways, right? We can either do it by being part of a regional entity, if that makes sense, or we can do it by having our own attraction strategy. What's been the town's policy, and I happen to agree with this, at least until maybe we get some more critical mass, maybe down the road we might want to look at things differently. But the benefit to being part of a regional entity is that we get the benefit of tapping into a breadth of staff services and specialties that we wouldn't get if we could afford to hire one person. So for example, they have sports attraction people that do specifically sports. They send people to various, well, let's say pre-COVID for now, right? Until we see how things are going to change. They had people going to trade shows to attract conferences, to attract different types of tourism events. They have a team dedicated to attracting people from Mexico, as an example. They have graphic artists and videographers, and you know that in terms of their overall team. That again, if we hired, a team of maybe one or two people out of the resources that we have, or what we're giving to them, I should say, we just wouldn't be able to do the kind of advertising, joint advertising. Also, you know, Oro Valley, while we know Oro Valley and we know the name, when you're attracting visitors, people know Tucson. And so when you go to the Visit Tucson website, we're featured, but we're not, you know, we don't want to be left out. Now, I know that Marana has headed in their own direction. Any of their hotels that are in Marana are not on the Visit Tucson website. And so that's a benefit to our hotels to be on the Visit Tucson website. Otherwise, they're not on it. And so that, you know, those are those kind of things that are important. I will tell you, however, that, you know, the council and the staff feel that we need to have our own Oro Valley centric visitor attraction strategy. And we haven't been really strongly headed in that direction. So we've developed our own team that will put that strategy together. And we will then potentially partner with Visit Tucson on maybe some of those components, or we might do it ourselves, depending on what it is. It might be a social media strategy that we might be able to manage ourselves. It might be, we might be able to use Visit Tucson for something, for the videos or something like that. But, for now, we do continue to look at the return on investment and the metrics. And you're right, Mr. Beasley, we need to have good metrics, and we need to make sure that there's a, that we're getting what we should get. Now, our contribution to Visit Tucson is pretty small in their grand budget scheme. Pima County gives them 50% of all of their bed taxes collected in the county. Tucson gives them about a third of their bed taxes. We don't give them that high of a percentage. Well, last year was a little bit different because we do it it's negotiated on a yearly basis. And I've already been very clear with Visit Tucson that I won't be recommending a specific percentage for it, that it needs to be based on something else. So we have four hotels, now five, in the town of Oro Valley. Possibly down the road, we could have more hotels if the Oro Valley Marketplace proposal goes forward and there's additional hotels there. Then we could be looking at a critical mass where we might want to do a little bit of a hybrid or some other way of contracting for specific services, and we do others ourselves. But that, you know, right now that remains to be seen. And then with regard to the Chamber of Commerce, the Chamber has a very specific service agreement with us. I'm happy to share that if it's something that you want, where they do some things that we are paying for in this. For example, it included certain number of tables at the annual State of the Town. It included their participation in certain programs. It included, you know, they're doing the Shop Local program. In other words, we're contracting with them for certain services, things that made sense for us to use the Chamber for, that they also commit to doing this beyond the ones that are their members. So they have to be broader. It really is a force multiplier for us because they have access. And in fact, during our OV Safe Steps, they were integral in helping us roll out that program and touch base with all of the programs. They do the business visits and that kind of thing. Those are all things that are contracted. It's been a very, very strong partnership. And I can assure you, we get more than our $40,000 money's worth. That's not even a full position for the town. They complement our business retention program substantially.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do I have other questions from members of the commission? Okay, not hearing any. So at this point, I think that overall, from the perspective of the questions we've asked, I think we're, as a group, as a commission, we're satisfied with what has been presented under the recommended budget. Obviously, we still have a tentative budget to go through, but our work here is to review and provide input and counsel for the recommended budget. Let me ask both the town manager and the CFO if there's any particular questions that we didn't ask that you expected us to ask and that we should have asked. And it's okay to say no.
Gosh, I hope not.
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I don't have any. I mean, this was a lengthy list, honestly, to get through. And then on top of the list that we had with our council one-on-ones, and so you got to see kind of both of those. I attached both of those documents. There were a lot of questions. And surprisingly to me, very little overlap in the questions. And just a lot of detail, certainly, but very very specific and touching on just different angles of things and not really, I don't recall really seeing, and you guys can run through the list and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't recall seeing the same question answered or asked twice. I looked at both of those lists and they really, again, just not a whole lot of overlap. So it was definitely a team effort on the part of our staff to address those appropriately and as comprehensively as possible. Very grateful for my team and my staff, but also the executive leadership team that also pitched in and provided a lot of support and assistance in addressing the questions. So,
one thing I will say, every time I've gone through a budget, usually there's one item that pops out of the budget process that you have to kind of look at it. So how did that get to my level? And the one that cropped up this time was credit card fees. Well, I don't know how much the account has in the way of credit card fees. That's not, I don't see that level, but I'm kind of wondering what this was, credit card fees. And so anyway, I my only input to help you there is that, the seller or the purveyor of the goods shouldn't have to pay 1 cent for the credit card machines. It should be the person who wants to use the card. And so one of the questions that rose up from this whole process, I was quite surprised. I'm at this stage, let me just add one other thing. I know that we have worked long and hard on the budget, you have, and I want to thank Wendy and Michael for all of their work they've done on this. It seems to be ceaseless and never ending, but we did work very hard to put together a solution for the pension funding, the unfunded liability. Yesterday, the Treasury Department issued preliminary guidelines for the use of the American Rescue Plan. I don't know if you've seen that, David. The language in there disturbs me a bit regarding the use of the requirement not to use the funds for funding of pensions. And something just caught my attention. And I particularly was interested in the fact that they started offering up in the guidelines what they would accept, not what they wouldn't accept. And that's always a red flag to me, that they're trying to figure out a way to narrow this. And it's something we might just offer up the council that you might want to really look into very heavy before we get too far down the road. Never can tell how the federal government will react to in specific instances, but it did alarm me a little bit, and I'm not generally one to alarm, so something to be aware of.
Yeah, I'll just address that very briefly, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. We are in the proposed budget. We are not advocating, or that's not part of our plan to utilize any of the American Rescue Funds Act monies directly for pension obligation bonds or paying down our public pension debt or anything like that. So I think we're going to be okay in that regard. And we're still waiting for final guidance. Everything that we've received from the Treasury is interim at this point. But our indications, and I was just on a call with the League of Arizona Cities and Towns this morning. Wendy was on that call as well. All indications are that what we utilize the CARES Act resources for, we will likely be able to utilize the ARPA monies for as well. And that's really public safety. And so police salaries, wages, benefits, not excluding the PSPRS unfunded liability. So that would not, again, we would not utilize it for that purpose. We would utilize it to offset our police wages and costs associated with our public safety personnel. And then that would free up capacity that we could utilize in other areas of the budget.
Okay. I'm only being a signal bearer here. I'm not telling you I know that for a fact, but it was the first time I'd seen that language, and so it kind of disturbed me. Okay, enough of that. I'm going to ask my colleagues, do we have any other questions to ask on this recommended budget from staff? Yes, sir, Eastland.
When are we likely to see the final proposal that goes to the town council?
The proposal for the tentative budget?
Yeah,
for the modifications for the tentative budget, Mr. Beeson?
Yes.
We're working on finaling them now, and so I would say by early next week.
I think she's looking for nodding heads. And yes or no?
There won't be any surprises past what we discussed with you this evening, I promise. If there are, I'll be shocked. I mean, there could be little minor, we should have moved this from this department, or, that kind of thing, little minor changes. But otherwise, we've gone over what the big stuff is going to be. Nothing, won't be anything different from that. It'll look like a big jump, as you know, because of that $27 million additional increase between that, the grant, and the Westward Look dollars. Certainly notable, but explainable, very easily explainable.
Okay. All righty. So at this point, I'm going to close discussion on the tentative budget. And at this time, I want to thank my colleagues. And again, a big shout out to Wendy and Michael for all the work you did. We know it's a lot. And thank you so much for your support for the work we did. I'm going to move on into the day here. Right now, the time council comments. Councilmember Nicholson is with us. Allison,
He is not present, Chair Latchford.
Okay. All right. So we're going to get him one day, and boy, he's going to have a lot of stuff to tell us. I'll tell you. Okay. Next, I'm going to ask if any of the members of the commission have future agenda items that they want to put on for consideration. Okay. Hearing none, we'll close that. We have none at the moment. And then on the adjournment, I just want to announce that our next meeting will return to a Tuesday afternoon at 4 p.m. And that will be held on June 15th. And at that time, we'll probably have definitely the tentative budget in front of us. And if I remember right, the final budget has to be done by June 30th, is July 1st. So, okay, adjournment. May I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right. We have a Commissioner Easley moved to adjourn, and we have a second from Commissioner
Salverson.
Yeah, Salverson and Mason.
They don't sound alike.
You two need to stop sitting next to one another. Yeah. I'll get a better speaker by the next time I have this meeting. Anyway, we have a second. All those in favor to adjourn?
Aye.
And no opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone. We appreciate it. We are adjourned at 5:41. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it.